Grade 2 Conference, Lecture 18, Preparation, Part 2. I want to talk now about not so much the content of your preparation, but some of the methods that you're, I hope, already cultivating, and which you will need to cultivate in order not only to be capable of preparing for growing content year by year in an intense and way that is not going to consume all of your time, but also with preparation, I would say, or the sine qua non of really good preparation, is organization as well. And how do you feel about your organizational talents? Okay, I won't ask you, but, you know, this is an area where we can all improve. I would include myself here as well. And you can see, you know, that this conference in and of itself is the result of a lot of organizational decisions. You know, how am I going to be able to present to you in a reasonable amount of time that you can really work with in 14 days without being overwhelmed, the richness and the fullness and the demandingness of the second grade curriculum and all of the various things that you need to do. We can not do everything, of course, in this period of time. But, you know, how to organize things so that there's a logic, there's a coherence. And what did I do? Well, for every single online conference, I find myself essentially getting ready to teach the class as though I'm about to take on a second grade. So you are essentially receiving the fruits, I hope they're fruits, the results anyway, of the same kind of preparation that I did when I taught second grade. You know, hours and hours and hours of work with books and going over those saint stories and discovering new things about them and painting and form drawing and working with the math again and again. It's an incredible experience, and I realize that basically, you know, the organization of information that's needed to teach a class is basically going to serve as the template for a conference like this as well. So, organization. How can we help ourselves with that? First of all, by understanding where does organization come from? You know, we know that our thinking capacities arise out of the interplay of the astral body and the etheric body to begin with, and then finally the astral body and the ego really give us true cognitive activity. We could say that organization begins in the womb as the etheric body works upon the physical body, very much from outside, moving the organs around. And what's embryology? It's, you know, nothing but a ceaseless progression of migrations of organs from one part of the body to the other, floating around, moving around, finding their relationship with one another. And then after we're born, the same thing continues, and we have these sort of organizational milestones. So that finally when the child comes into grade one with the first dentition, second dentition, we hope occurring, but there also at that time the etheric body has very much completed its organizational work on the sensory organs, the first organs that are fully developed within us. And that is a milestone which allows the etheric forces that were involved in organizing the senses to now actually start to be forces of memory, which is, we could say, organizing our experience. When we remember something, we are organizing that which otherwise just happened to us. We're putting it into a context. Think of those words, organize, obviously, There's an organic process at its foundation. Remember the members of our being, the higher and lower members of our being, are now in a way being used, their capacities, the forces that form them, are being used in a new way. So this is what we want as teachers, because the level of organization of which we are capable is going to be a huge model for the children. It's not like they have to organize their lives on our level, but rather if we are organized, then the children are given a greater degree of freedom to find their own way in subjects, to joyfully live in that structure that we are creating for them. And here is something very interesting. I'm sure that some of you work in schools where maybe fourth graders or fifth or sixth graders have started to use something called the Z line, as the letter Z, Z line, which is a line of products, which are binders, and a whole system involved with those binders, including like bulletin board items in the classroom, which are there to help the children keep track, especially of their homework, their assignments, what's due in their main lesson book. Different schools utilize it in different ways. You have these, nice big binders. Before long, it'll probably be, there'll be iPad and iPhone versions as well. In different colors and, nice sort of Waldorfian paintings are in there, and all kinds of wise sayings about organizing yourself. What I find interesting is that this is what the teachers should be doing. The teachers should be so organized, and that inner organization of the teachers and the outer organization should live so strongly in the classroom that the children don't have to do the organizing. Now, of course, if it's the teachers using Z-Line books only, they're going to only sell one Z-Line book per class. If you get the children to use them as well, you're selling 20, 25 or more books per class. So it's, a wonderful business ploy. No, the children need to be given the organizational capacities. In a certain way, it's kind of a farce, really. But don't tell that to your colleagues teaching older classes, because people are investing a lot of time and energy in these things. But it just shows that if the teacher is not taking care of some basic things, it will be displaced, and the children will have to start taking care of them. And it's an interesting phenomenon that one sees in a class where perhaps it's just been a difficult karmic knot, and by eighth grade, the children have had three or four or sometimes more different class teachers. And you would think, what a mess that poor class is going to be. Those children never had a real ego there long enough to help them. And the funny thing is that the children, not individually, but as a group, they take on a kind of ego. And classes like that, often, though they're a mess academically, socially, they're often very strong, very cohesive. The children have been able to do what the teachers were not able to do. But that exacts a toll on the child. In emergency situations, it's amazing what children are capable of. We have any number of, wonderful children's stories to show that. But it's not something desirable or wanted. So you take care of your organization, and I would say you don't have to use Z-Line, but something like a book, a Filofax, day timer, day planner, those are now sort of going out of fashion, though they are great and they are still perfectly usable and a wonderful way to organize. I used such a book for years and years, about two decades, I think. But now we also have devices, though I think year by year they're less and less controversial in Waldorf schools and more accepted that the teachers can at least be using this. And when, as I am giving these lectures, the iPhone and the iPad are sort of the, archetypal devices in this way, though many other imitators and competitors are showing up. But what it is essentially is taking the book and digitizing it and putting it in a very different form. And one can work to some extent with greater speed on such a thing, although sometimes it takes, there's so many glitches that it's faster to write something down. And you have it all in one place. And I think that's the important thing. And that one place is in that device, and it's not kind of spread all over your consciousness. Now, let me share another one of these anecdotes that I'm reluctant to share. In the 1990s, I had a fellowship at the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching, which in those days was based at Princeton University. And this entailed often being in Princeton for weeks at a time. It was really fun, really nice. And I worked exclusively with public school teachers. And that was also very interesting. I learned a great deal there. So I would now and then, find myself in a store or a restaurant or something like that in Princeton. And in the 1990s, there were still people around, still active in the business life, because Princeton is basically a pretty small town, people who could tell you stories about Albert Einstein, who had worked in the Institute for Advanced Study up until about his death in 1954, 55, thereabouts. And these people remembered him. And a recurrent story always went something like this. Here's Albert Einstein, indisputably one of the greatest physicists, mathematicians who had ever lived, absolutely brilliant man. And he shows up in maybe it's like a soda fountain store or something like that. And of course, everybody knew him. He was pretty unique looking. And he would look around and say, "Do you have a phone booth here?" "Oh, well, Dr. Einstein, you don't have to pay for a call. Here, use our phone." No, I don't want the phone. I want the phone book." Oh, here, sir. Here's the phone. Princeton? Yes, local phone book, Princeton." They give him the phone book, and there they would watch him. He would open up the phone book to E, and he would find the name Einstein, Albert, and he would kind of look and carefully register what was there. What was he looking for? His address. And the person would say, "Dr. Einstein, did you just move?" No, "I've lived there for years." Sir, you're looking for your address?" And he would look up and say something to the effect of, "You know what? I have better things to memorize than my address." So there you've got it. And I'd say, let that be a lesson to you. Maybe you're not Einstein, but you have better things to remember than most of the stuff that comes up in committees, faculty meetings, or whatever. People's phone numbers and who you're supposed to call at 2 p.m. and all of that stuff. Put that in a book. Put that in your iPhone or your iPad or your computer or whatever device you use. Take that outside of your memory life so that you can remember the critical things, the important things, such as poems and songs and games and stories, and also carry a living memory of the things that your children said today and did today before you have a chance to write them down. Because it's not only, you're not only going to be writing about those children you observe every day on purpose, but wonderful, charming things will be said and fascinating questions will be asked. And if you're walking around with a lot of numbers in your head and a lot of agenda items from committee meetings, which generally amount to being totally unimportant, you're not going to have room and space for the important things. So definitely have a place in that book for just jotting down notes. You know, you could have pages, sections for each committee you're on. I hope you're not on too many committees now or ever. Notes from the College of Teachers. Maybe you're going through twice. You already have a number of responsibilities in the school. Put all of that stuff outside of you. Let it have a life of its own in print. Steiner tells us that this is a great favor that Ahriman has done for us, that he's taught us how to take notes, and that helps us in a way with things that are not important. But things that are important, we want to have space. We want to have forces of consciousness so that we can really keep the important things within our heart and our soul. So that's a sort of spatial solution, or one among many solutions to help you with issues of memory. And something else is endemic in the Waldorf movement that people don't even talk about it anymore, which is really a pity. And I'm sure even as a first grade teacher, even if this is what's coming up is just your second year in the school, you've probably encountered this, especially towards the end of your first grade year, in April and May, when this stuff is not only endemic, but also becomes epidemic. And this is, it's sort of a couple of things, but they're very connected. The person who always comes late to a faculty meeting and then has to be sort of given a little briefing on what just transpired, an announcement that was made or an issue that came up that might be of very great importance. That person may also be somebody who will miss a meeting in which his or her voice could have counted in a very important way, so that a decision has to be left for a week until that person returns. And it could be that same person, or maybe their good friend or something like that. When an issue is coming up and we say, okay, well, the committee was going to report on that, and you know, what did you discover? Oh, well, we didn't get that done. Next week, where we're just all running late, and so-and-so's been sick, and I had my class trip, and whatever. And of course, towards the end of the year, there are a lot of valid excuses. Class trips, class plays, graduations, concerts, whatever. But these things, which have more to do with time than with space, are incredibly important. And I can't say, here's how to help your colleagues with this. You probably really can't do very much for them. And in a certain way, you know, you really even shouldn't be doing it. But how can you help yourself so that in another year or two or three, you're not saying the same things and acting in that way? Because what happens is, as I said, it becomes a bit epidemic. It becomes viral. It spreads from faculty member to faculty member, and people's expectations for one another are lowered, and finally, that works on those people themselves. It lowers their own expectations. So how do we work with punctuality? Coming to meetings on time, getting reports or whatever we're held responsible for on time. You might have noticed at the end of the school year that there were some teachers late with their reports. Believe me, I've been in many faculty meetings as a consultant in which they're discussing reports that are months overdue. It's autumn, and those summer reports have not been sent out yet. Or even I knew of a teacher who was more than a year late with his reports. So how can we work with time? Let's look at that in the next lecture.